Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us. This morning we'll be talking about Heter Me'a Rabbonim. Heter Me'a Rabbonim is the flip side of what we spoke about in the past, which is Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom, when Rabbeinu Gershom was misaken around the year 1000 to not divorce a wife against her will and also not to take more than one wife. So if a person finds himself stuck in a marriage that he doesn't want to be in, he cannot solve it himself. He has to have his wife's acquiescence, either to take a get or to take a get. If she doesn't want to take a get, then he's stuck. He can't take another wife in addition. And that's how these two takanos work together. If you just have one without the other, it wouldn't have any teeth. If you just had the isser of Gerushin Bal Karcha, not to divorce a wife against her will, so no problem, just take another wife. But that's why Rabbeinu Gershom also made the second takana that you can't take a second wife on top of a first wife. So now there is one way out, even though women might not have a way out if her husband doesn't want to give a get, but if a man is in a situation where his wife doesn't want to take a get, there is one way out, and that is Heter Me'a Rabbonim. What we're going to do this morning is see, first of all, why there should be a Heter Me'a Rabbonim. Do you need a Heter Me'a Rabbonim? How does a Heter Me'a Rabbonim work? And the concept of Me'a Rabbonim is probably a concept that you are not familiar with anywhere and have not heard of at any point in any of your travels through Shas, except in this very specific instance. It's not familiar, it's not a basin of Gimel, it's not a basin of Chaf Gimel, it's not a basin of Ayin Beis. Where does this Heter Me'a Rabbonim come from? Where does the number come from? Where does the concept come from? How in the world could Heter Me'a Rabbonim knock out a cherem of Rabbeinu Gershom, which was presumably Gadol Himenu B'Chachma? So we have a lot of questions, and what we have to know, what are the halachas of Heter Me'a Rabbonim? Can I just walk into the mirror in Eretz Yisrael and ask 100 people to sign on the dotted line? Do they have to be the chief rabbis of 100 cities? Do they have to be rabbis? Could they be B'nai Torah? Does it have to be rabbis at all? Maybe I could just walk into any shul in any community and have 100 signatures, like a petition. So what are the parameters? What are the halachas of Heter Me'a Rabbonim? When could it be used? So these are all the questions that hopefully we will learn together right now. So please allow me to share my screen with you. There we go. So before we get into the specifics of Heter Me'a Rabbonim, we have to finish off a few halachos of the concept of Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom. Before we, again, Heter Me'a, but we never really did the Shulchan Aruch on the Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom, but one question that is a very interesting question, it's a little bit of a detail, but let's start with that just because it's so interesting. We pointed out that when it comes to the Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom, the Rashba said that it didn't apply in the whole world. It only applied in, you know, the Ashkenaz parts of the world. But where I live, says the Rashba, we didn't have a Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom. It never spread to my, you know, to the areas of Spain where I live, said the Rashba. Now, what happens, and I told you about the family of the two Iraqi women married to the Iraqi man who moved into Ramot Bet, where my in-laws live. And they're still living there, hopefully, happily. I don't know if I should say, I don't know what you say. Happily married, I hope, on some level. I hope they're happy. That's certainly true. Well, what happens if you have, so the case that I told you about last week, again, a fellow from Iraq, which never had this, the Arab countries, the Jewish community in the Arab countries never had this, Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom, so there was definitely polygamy in those Arab countries, even in the Jewish community, somewhat, because it was considered, you know, okay and accepted in those countries. What would be the following? Could you have two Ashkenazi girls marry one Sephardi guy? Right? You have an Iraqi guy. But two girls who, I don't know, two girls from TAG, two girls from SKA, you know, two local Ashkenazi girls. So do we say that the Isser of... Do we say that the Isser of Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom, which again, only applied to the bulk of Ashkenazi Jewry, but not certain subsections of Sephardi Jewry, of Edot HaMizrach, do we say that it depends on the guy or the girl? I mean, if the guy is, if Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom was that Mr. Jew, you may not take a second wife, Mr. Iraqi Jew never had that limitation. And therefore, He can take two wives. But wait, was Chen Rabbeinu Gershom issued to the women, to the Ashkenazi women, in which case you can't have two women join an Iraqi man. So look at the Be'er Ha'etev on the bottom of the Shulchan Aruch. He quotes the Halachas Ketanos, "De takonas Rabbeinu Gershom ar kakafta de gavri munach." It is limited. It is only a takana on the man, which makes sense. A man shouldn't take advantage of others, of women, and not treat them properly, and therefore they have this limitation of all the parameters of Chen Rabbeinu Gershom. Aval isha b'chol d'hu nichala, of a woman wants to, you know, a woman wants to get married, and she doesn't have this chiyuv, and she wants to, you know, submit herself to this kind of marriage, which is obviously not an ideal marriage, but if she's willing to, for whatever reason, social, economic, or other reason, to marry herself to a, you know, guy that will have multiple wives. Muteras linasei shnei Ashkenazios l'svardi echad. And that is quoted on the bottom of the Shulchan Aruch in the Be'er Ha'etev, that yes, you could have an Ashkenazi girl, two Ashkenazi girls, or one Ashkenazi and one Sephardi, certainly, but if the man is Sephardi, then, and not subject to this Chen Rabbeinu Gershom, would be permitted. Again, obviously, we're not talking about in countries where polygamy is prohibited, and obviously in America, somebody actually just sent me Rabbi Becher, Mordechai Becher, is a well-known speaker and an exile, a big historian. He's one of my colleagues at Yeshiva, and he sent me an archival photo of Rav Yitzchak Huttner and Rav Moshe Feinstein's their application for immigration to America. And it was just fascinating to, you know, look at Rav Moshe Feinstein when he was, I don't know, like 25 years old, and look at Rav Yitzchak Huttner when he was also in his, he looked probably like a 19-year-old boy. And it's interesting to see what they're, you know, they didn't look like the Rosh Yeshiva picture that we all have in our minds. So, no surprise if Huttner had a big chup, no surprise. But those who know Chaim Berlin can understand where that comes from. Nice head of hair, combed up, really looking very spiffy. So on the bottom of that American immigration document, the person who wants to immigrate to America has to declare that he is not trying to undermine the government of America. He hereby reneges. What's the word? He renounces. Thank you. His citizenship in any other country. And then it says it's only a 3-line renouncement or a 3-line declaration. And one of the 3-line declaration is, I am not a polygamist, and I do not. I do not believe in polygamy, and I am not a polygamist. Those two phrases are out of the 3 lines that are in the American naturalization paper for, again, this is going back to probably the 19, when did they come? I don't know. Some of you probably know better than me when Ramosha and Huttner came. But on both of those documents, it said, I do not believe in polygamy, and I am not a polygamist. I guess America, when it was bringing in other people from other countries, do not want to introduce polygamy. Therefore, it's definitely illegal here. I'm just talking about, you know, halacha, you know, without getting into the specific legalities in any specific province. Now, let's look. We never really saw the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch, how it presents the sugya of Rabbeinu Gershom, Chen Rabbeinu Gershom. Let's see this, and then we'll go from there to the way out of the Chen Rabbeinu Gershom, which would be the Heter of Mei Rabbanim. So there's one main issue that will first be discussed, which we talked about a little bit last week, and that is the question of, did Rabbeinu Gershom apply his takana, his cherem, even if there's a mitzvah for a person to marry this second wife? For example, in a case of Yibum, if a man is already married, happily married, and then his brother, Rachman Litzlan, dies childless, so now there's a mitzvah to do Yibum on his sister-in-law, but he already has a wife. That's question number one. And similar to that is what happens if a couple is married and unfortunately they're not zocha to have children. So again, he has a mitzvah of purvu. So is there a prohibition for him to take a second wife in that situation? Does Rabbeinu Gershom extend even when there is a v'malka mitzvah? Says the Shulchan Aruch, Sif Yud, which is what we're up to. Rabbeinu Gershom hecher mahanosei al ishto. You're not allowed to marry a second wife besides your wife. Aval b'yavama lo hecherim. But by Yibum, he did not limit it. Meaning you are, even if you're married with a wife, he never said you can't do Yibum. He wouldn't make a chayrim against the Torah, the mitzvah of the Torah. That he wouldn't do. V'chein ba'arusa. This is a different point. This is not a question of a mitzvah, but again, this is a question when a guy has an arus, a guy is mekadesh a woman, but never actually brings him into his house, and then for whatever reason, he doesn't want to go through, or she doesn't want to go through, she refuses to actually get married to him, she just wants to stay as a mekudesh, she doesn't want to move in with him. So he never really married her with any nisuim, so he's allowed to marry a second wife. Meaning, because he's not, the first wife is not really his wife. But that's a side point, we're not going to discuss that. The Rama explains the second point that I just said, if he doesn't want to take this arusa in, so he doesn't have the limitation of Chayim Rabbeinu Kesha. Continues, because she doesn't want to take it. So if a wife doesn't want to take it, so you're stuck. You can't get married. But if an arusa doesn't want to take it, we're not going to hold you back from marrying a wife if the first woman is not even your wife, is trying to mess you up. Continues the Rama. Any situation where there's the pressure of a mitzvah, like I mentioned, like the case of Yavama a moment ago, a person has waited 10 years without having children, so we know that's a makam mitzvah, and there we will allow, if his wife doesn't want to take a get, he could marry a second wife, even against her will. Even against the will of the first, even though the first one is not taking a get. Omnam, however, Yesh Cholkim, there are those who argue, Svir Lehi, Dechem Rabbeinu Gesh, Noig, Afilu B'makam Mitzvah, Va'afilu B'makam Yibum. There is another opinion. There's Taka Machlokas, that even B'makam Mitzvah, like Yibum, or in a case where they waited 10 years and he has not yet fulfilled Puravu, where there's a mitzvah that's binding on him, still we will not allow him to get married to a second wife, and we will not permit him to fulfill his mitzvah, because hey, he has to be worried about Chayim Rabbeinu Kesha. Okay, so that's a machlokas, two opinions in the Shulchan Aruch. That case, the case of Yibum, is not such a common case by us, because anyway, we do Chalitza. The case of after 10 years is taka very serious. You know, how do we paskin in that? So machlokas Rishonim, does Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom, let's say you have a couple that's married for 10 years, and the woman doesn't want to take a get, and the husband wants to build a family. He wants to build a family, and she refuses to take a get. So does the Chayim Rabbeinu Gershon limit him and require that he wait until she accepts the get, or maybe we'll see later, has to figure out how to put himself a Hetaver Rabbanim together? That is yes, so that's a very good point. I want to stay clear of that, because that's obviously a whole sugya of what are the parameters of the of that one is married for 10 years, and he didn't have children yet. Of course, nowadays we know that the numbers are actually quite equal as far as male infertility, female infertility. The numbers, from what I understand from the experts, is approximately 33% is male caused, 33% is female caused, and believe it or not, 33% is the combination of this specific couple together. So it ends up being that the woman is probably at fault 33% of the time, but the combination of this marriage will end up being about 66% of the time, because there's another 33% of the time that it's the two of them together that prevent them from having children. So that's a different sugya. Now, another area that has to be discussed is what happens when you have a woman who doesn't take a get because she's in a coma, or she went nuts, she went crazy. And we know that for gerushin to take place, you have to give it to a woman who's sane, of sane mind. So says the Shulchan Aruch Vayter, ubamakam she'en harishona bas gerushin. Let's say the first wife, is someone who you just can't divorce. Even if you wanted to, she can't accept it. Kilon she'nishtates. Or it's a situation where you're halachically required to divorce, or whatever the situation, whatever cases those are. O shuvin adin legarsha. But she refused to take one. So here it's she's in a coma, she can't take a get, or she went nuts, as unfortunately can happen. She suffered a terrible brain injury, and she can't take a get. If it would be really very terrible brain injury, there are a lot of what's the parameter of how how much of a shota does a person have to be? That's a complicated question, which is not for our discussion. So in these two cases, then, there's no chen Rabbeinu Gershom. Yesh lahakil hatu lalisa acharis. He could just, you know, if she's nishtata or you're in a situation where you're supposed to divorce her, you don't even, there's no chen Rabbeinu Gershom. Fine. V'kol shekein continues the Shulchan Aruch, im hi arusa ve'ena rotza l'hinasei lo o lifter mimenes. This is what we mentioned before. If she was only an arusa anyway, and she doesn't want to get married to him, but she also doesn't want to take a get from him, so, like, what, you're going to keep him in limbo? You're not even married to him and you keep him in limbo. So that's going to be mutter. Says the Shulchan Aruch, very important words. Again, he's getting this from the Rashba. Velo pashta takanaso b'chol ha'aratzos. This takan of Rabbeinu Gershom has not extended all over the world. Well, where did it and where didn't it? So the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam are not going to specify locations, but they're going to, you know, it's going to be too hard to specify areas and regions, but look at what the Rambam says. Says the Rambam, you could only assume that there's no Chen Rabbeinu Gershom, that it didn't reach this specific region. You have to know, listen to how he says it. You have to know definitively that Chen Rabbeinu Gershom never got to this place. But if you have a place you don't know otherwise, no Heg B'chol Makom. He quotes from the Rishon that if you don't know, you have to assume the Chen Rabbeinu Gershom does apply there. What happens if you went from one place to another place, right? What happens if you you moved to Iraq, or you moved from Iraq to, you could just marry the Ashkenazi guy in Iraq, or the Iraqi in, you know, in the shtetl? What's going to be in that case? We're not going to talk about that. But next line is maybe the most important line of the Shulchan Aruch. Says the Shulchan Aruch, after he just said a moment ago, that was Ramah, the Shulchan Aruch said a moment ago, it didn't apply everywhere. Shulchan Aruch now says, Velo, this is how he paskins, Velo hecherim ela ad sof ha'elef ha'chamishi. Rabbeinu Gershom's cherem was only binding until the end of the fifth millennium. Right now we're in the year 5781. That means cherem Rabbeinu Gershom ended 781 years ago. Which means, if we stop here, that, hey, this whole discussion, this whole issue of marrying a second woman doesn't apply at all, Bizman Hazeh, because it ended. The reason why Rabbeinu Gershom said, I'm only going to do it until a certain point in time, is because he's making up, remember, he wasn't one of the Baalei HaGemara or the Baalei HaMishnayos who could just make takanas. So for him to make a wide-ranging takana that affects is a very significant takana. Remember, to outlaw polygamy, and if it's explicitly mutter from the Torah, is he did it for societal reasons. And if you're doing something that's for societal reasons, you don't know what society is going to be in 400 years after you live. He did it for societal reasons because it was A, problematic for family situations, it caused fights, it caused bickering. B, because it was very terrible. If you live in a community where no one practices polygamy, but the Jews do, could you only imagine what would happen, how terrible that would look on social media? So he's not going to make a takana for all of history if he doesn't know what if it's based on social reasons. He doesn't know what the social climate will be 500 years hence. So how could he have the audacity to be menabe? He doesn't know. He can't prophesy what the world will look like. Well, why did he pick the end of the Elef HaChamishi? I think that's just a very even way to do it. I don't think there is a... to the contrary, you're saying it seems very arbitrary to pick the Elef HaChamishi. It's a way of saying the next really big chunk of time. But why would you say 100 years or 200 years or 300 years? To say the end of the millennium. I think that's a good way to, you know, pick. Instead of saying, okay, if you were Rabbi Meir Gersh, you would have said the next 150 or 200 years. So he said, instead of... Yeah. But where did that? Why? Yossi's asking why did he pick this? You know, the end of the millennium instead of saying for 200 years. So I think that's effectively what he was trying to do. Okay, if we stop there again, if you just have that line of the Shulchan Aruch again, that was the Shulchan Aruch speaking that it doesn't apply anymore. So again, there's no Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom to talk about. Go ahead and take as many wives as you want. I mean, I'm not telling you to do that. I'm just saying, from a halachic perspective, that's what would come out. My wife would be very angry if I said, go ahead and take as many wives as you want. I'll just point out the Shulchan Aruch permits you halachically. That doesn't apply anymore. Nevertheless, of course, Rama always has to come and poke a hole and pop the balloon. Mikol makom bechol medinos elu, says the Rama. That's just about everybody on this call is subscribed under this bechol medinos elu. Hatakana v'haminhag b'mekomo omeid. Even if you say technically the chayrim, the legality of the chayrim is only binding till the end of the fifth millennia, which ended 781 years ago. Nevertheless, the content of his gzeira, of his chayrim, continues. Ve'einos and shtei nashim, and not only that, not only are you not allowed to practice polygamy, but even more than that, v'kofin, we will force you. If you remember, a few months ago when we started Evan HaEzer, we learned that typically when it comes to marriage items, we don't force things. But when it comes to taking a second wife, we'll force you with a cheirem and with a nidui. If somebody would violate Misha over Venose, Shnei Nashim, Ligaj, we would force you to divorce. In any of our Ashkenazi communities, we would force you to give up one of your wives. We would not allow it. We will not tolerate it. Except he brings Yeshom, who says, no, we won't. Yeshom does not as an ein lakuf. We're not nowadays, since the chayim doesn't really apply, how can we force somebody? You know, it's one thing we encourage somebody not to take a second wife, but if it really doesn't apply anymore, Meikar Hadin, how can we force somebody to divorce one of his wives? It's really its mutter. Okay. Me'acher shekvar nishlov ha'elef ha'chamishin. Anyway, ein hogin kain, we don't paskin like that lenient opinion. We will force, even though it doesn't apply in its full strength of the chayrim, nevertheless, we will force the person to abide by it, nevertheless. Finally, you're asking when the Rama says Yesh Omrim this, Yesh Omrim this, what's the rule? Do we follow the first or the second? Well, I'm not sure. I don't know. But here he says, he concludes, we don't paskin like this Yesh Omrim. He go like the first opinion. The Rama says clearly, and therefore, the Rama is telling us that we will, not only does it still apply nowadays, but we will even enforce it with force, and force the person to divorce from one of those wives. Finally, the end, it's a very long Rama. This is a long sif in the Shulchan Aruch. Finally, the Shulchan Aruch concludes, I think it's the Rama, he says, what happens if you have, and this really does happen, a couple's married, and either both parties or she goes off the derech. The wife is no longer religious, and she's not interested, and who cares? She doesn't care about a get anymore. This really does happen. It's tragic, but it does happen. It's even more tragic if it's with children, and it happens. Misha himira ishto, a man who his wife went off the derech. So now there's an added layer of concern. Not only are we concerned with, well, how is he going to go ahead and build a family or get remarried if she doesn't want to take a get? There's an added level that, wait a second, she's hanging around, if she's not religious and hanging around with men and she's an Eishes Ish, it's really bad because any activity that she'll get involved with is going to be Eishes Ish. So it's in her best interest at this point that she get a get, but she doesn't want to take a get. So here, this is the point that we did mention last week. Misha hamira ishto, a man whose wife goes off the derech, mizaka le get aide acher. You could be mizaka get. Normally, it's never not as a chus. You can't be mizoka in a get for a woman, because usually not as a chus. But in this situation, where she's a married woman and nevertheless being active with other men, it is very much as a chus for her. So you could be, you have to write a get for her, have somebody bizocha on her behalf, and then you could go ahead and marry a second wife. And in some places don't have the minhag of being mizaka the get. They say, oh, if she went off the derech, she's not taking get, you're just allowed to go ahead, you know, let her, she doesn't want to get, that's her problem, not your problem. So she'll go ahead and live her life however she does, you know, in a God-forsaken way. And you go ahead and remarry, because Rabbeinu Gershom, clearly Rabbeinu Gershom wouldn't have held you back and say you can't take another wife unless your wife willingly accepts it, in a case where your wife went off the derech and doesn't want to take a get. She's not religious anymore. Okay. That was all the Shulchan Aruch. One moment, please. I want to ask you a question. We had a number of machlokas that we just mentioned. We had a machlokas, what to do if there's a makom mitzvah, like somebody didn't have children yet and he has a mitzvah peruvu, that's still relevant. Or case even we had a machlokas. What was the other machlokas? We have a machlokas if it applies everywhere. We have a machlokas if it ended at the fifth millennia. There are a number of machlokas in here. Again, we saw the way the Shulchan Aruch is better, but there are a number of machlokas in. Comes the Beis Shmuel commenting on the Shulchan Aruch, and he wonders if there's a suffix, if you're allowed to take a second wife. What's the suffix? We presented a bunch of suffixes. We presented the suffix of, is there, by mitzvah, is there heter? We presented the suffix bizman hazeh, is there heter? And there could be suffix, there could be very complicated cases. You could have a case that's bizman hazeh, where they didn't have children, and the woman is mentally compromised. I won't say she's definitively a shota, but she's mentally compromised. And there's a mitzvah here involved. And it is Bizman Hazeh, so you have all kinds of complicated, you know, there are numerous reasons to be Mekel, but the question is how much room is there to be Mekel? So the Beis Shmuel points something out. He says, why was the Takana instituted? Why did Rabbeinu Gershom institute this Takana in the first place? He says, this was really a social Takana. Mishum Katata Tikud. He was worried about fighting. I don't know if he means fighting within the family. I mean, it's just not healthy in family dynamics if there are two wives. It's hard enough with one wife. But Kavachon could just imagine what it is with two wives, you know, dealing with their issues between each other. So, or maybe he means katata between us and the Goyim. I don't really know what he means by katata. But nevertheless, velomishum drara di isura. There's no, like, isser involved. It's not as a gzera for a mitzvah daraisa. Wait, is that obvious? That's not pashut at all. Why not? Because one might have really, really, really said, hey, this Hochem Rabbeinu Gershom is very much a Gzeira Dirabanan like every other Gzeira Dirabanan, right? Because if you remember, there's a mitzvah d'oraisa of, if you take a second wife, make sure that you could provide Sheiroksu Savana Salo Yigra to the first wife. So maybe Rabbeinu Gershom was worried that you're going to take a second wife without providing for your first wife, which is an Issa d'oraisa. So maybe it's not just a social... a politically correct stance to enforce monogamy. No, maybe there's a concern for the Issa del Raisa Sheiraksu Savana Salo Yigra. So says the Beis Shmuel, no, we don't consider it to be a Jara di Yisura, something that's related to Issa as a Gzera. Rather, we assume that it is indeed a social concern. Oh, if it's a social concern, then if there's a Safek, hey, I think we could be Mako. Nafkamina mizda, the fact that it's only a social takana, not actually a takana for halachic reasons, hecha deika plugsa betakanta, where there's a machlokas, whether the takana should apply because of various circumstances, hamekel ahisid. You could be mekel, because there's no isser here. We're not dealing with an isser. Certainly. Gam achsh, gam kasav achshav achar elef chamishi. Now that we're ready in the sixth millennia, Kvar Kala Hazman, Mikan Veilech Enel Minug. Right now it's only a Minug. So it's a Suffolk and it's only a Minug anyway. Certainly we could follow Din Torah and allow that latter marriage. Okay. Now, what I'd like to do now is to read through the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan is not going to say too many Chidushim. We'll see two or three Chidushim, but he puts everything together in a very beautiful... in a very beautiful package, as the Aruch HaShulchan knows how to do. He just writes so clearly. And when we pick up, and what he also does, he has a few applications as to the actual halachic, the binding, the efficacy of the binding power of these cherems in the lands that he's talking about. You'll see what I mean in just a minute. Says the Aruch HaShulchan in Simen Aleph Siv Chav Gimel. Zayoser, it's now more than 800 years, Bimei Rabbeinu Gershom Or HaGola, that now it's already more than 800 years, right? Because there's about 1,000 years or so. He's just giving us the history. Sharohu v'chachmei doro ha-takolos v'akatatos, all the terrible fighting that could be caused, mipnei ribei hanashim, and therefore, omdu v'taknu b'gzeira chamura, look at the next three words, u'bechol chomer sheba'olam. They made this cherem with all the strength of the cherem that they could muster, with an incredible power of strength, that, of course, you can't take another wife, and this spread, and this cherem spread, Berov Gol Yisrael, B'Tzarfas, in France, Veretz Ha'ai, Ha'i, I think he means the islands, I don't know what he means by that. Any ideas? V'Ha'emek, and the valley, I don't know my European topography well enough to know what he means by the valley in Europe. Okay, so he says it applies to islands. I don't know what islands. Does he mean England? What islands are there? Was this? You know, there are no islands off the coast of France except England. Maybe he means England. Emek, the valley, not sure what that refers to. Ashkenaz, okay, Germany. Russia, Poland. Ubechomedinas, Österreich. Fascinating. Okay, that's pretty good. So maybe it's Corsica. That's an island off France. But either way, you see that he established this in all these locales. Germany, Russia, Poland, the Austrian Empire. Fine. Now, look what he writes in the next line. V'chol kach kiblu tikun zeh. It was so well accepted that if somebody wouldn't abide by it, shem b'mikre rechok, if once in a million years there would be a poritz echad geder, who muchzak l'rasho l'ramai, v'hum etuv b'enei kol m'rachik mer, if there would be one guy who would violate it, and even in one in a million, we'd consider him a terrible person, and we'd stay away from him. Even though there are some who say that it ended after the fifth millennia, nevertheless, the Jews continue to mikol makom, even after the millennia ended, kimu v'kiblu ha'yehudim aleihem v'alzarim, you know where that phrase comes from, that's from the Megillah, l'hachzeh p'takana yafezu. Not only have the Jews committed themselves to continue keeping this takana, gam ha'malchus mi'aseres al ha'over takanasu, even the governments would punish for somebody who would practice polygamy. And therefore, look what he says, how long is this binding for? V'hatakana betokfa, it's in effect, ad bias hagoel, till Mashiach comes, it's binding. V'af b'medina shelo pashta takanaso, even in the lands where it didn't necessarily, this chayim was not necessarily spread to, k'mo ba'artzos hatugar. Yossi, what's af artzos hatugar? Not sure. U'medina's Africa, that I know. He says, doesn't matter, even in those countries it should apply. Second point, quotes of Beis Yosef, that in the places where it does apply, a woman's mechila doesn't help. Even if she says, it's okay, you could take another wife, just like Sarai said, that you could take Hagar. No, nowadays it doesn't work. Okay, what about a place where we are truly uncertain if it ever spread? We just really don't know if it ever got here. Let's say you have a place like like Turkey. Turkey is sort of in between Ashkenaz and Sfard. So, in, let's say, the Sfard lands, Turkey? No, Turkey is closer to Russia. Not really sure. Okay, but either way, let's say you have the Dai, you should know, the Bechol Ira Medina, she is Suffolk, in any location where it's uncertain, in Mispashta, Takanas, Rabbeinu, Gershom, Or, HaGolem, Lav, Chayavan out of doubt, Chayavan lahachzika, and we assume out of Suffolk, it probably did spread there. because presumably we assume it spread to the whole world, unless you know a specific area where it wasn't taken into effect. Fascinating. And therefore, that brings us to something very important. That brings us, gentlemen, to America and Australia. Why? Because it definitely didn't, in the year 1000, when Rabbeinu Gershom made this takana, there's no question in the world that it did not apply to America or Australia, because there weren't any Jews in America or Australia for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years later. Nevertheless, says the Aruch HaShulchan, this is really why I wanted to bring this line, V'af, again, he's writing this, the Aruch HaShulchan lived when? About 140 years ago, give or take. V'af gam ba'olam hechadash, the new world, v'America, v'Australin, in Australia, noheg takana zu. Where do you think all the Americans came from? Well, if you ask the, if you go to the Spanish-Portuguese synagogue, they're going to tell you, we're Spanish, right? The Spanish-Portuguese synagogue was founded in the year 1654, I believe. 1654, that's definitely the first Jewish community in North America. I think there's the Turo Synagogue, and then you have something in Havana, in Havana. I don't remember what the synagogue in Havana is, but I think 1654 is a Spanish-Portuguese synagogue, and they're Spanish. Remember, wait, Yossi, hold on a second. And Spain was what? Spain was the one country that the Rashba told us it didn't apply to. So we could really question this point of the Aruch HaShulchan to tell us that everybody who came to America is all from, you know, Russia and Poland and Lita and Germany and Austria and Hungary, you know, where the Takana did apply. But I guess even if the Spanish, there were a few people from Spain who did settle in New York in 1654, definitely the majority of the settling of the Northeast, at least, is definitely probably Ashkenazi at this point. You're saying the people who came to Spanish Portuguese didn't come from Spain, they came from Brazil, but still, if the people from Brazil, they came from Spain. Okay. Fine. Yes, in the 19th century, the main immigration was Germany and Russia. Good. So most of these, so therefore, he says that Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom, guys, bad news, sorry, only one wife. Fine. Continues the Aruch HaShulchan. What happens if you move from country to country? Again, let's say you have an Iraqi moves to France, where it's binding. America, where it's binding, or an American says, hey, I want a second wife, let me move to Iraq, where it's not binding. So there are halachas for this. We have plenty of halachas where something is tali b'minhag, and you move from one location to another location. So there are parameters, which I'm not going to get into now, because it's not as nogela maisa. But let's see this. I told you that there's this couple in Ramot Bet, where my in-laws live, my in-laws shul, where there is an elderly couple from Iraq. I can't say couple because it's not two, it's three. And the Iraqi man moved with his two wives to Eretz Yisrael. Let's assume that in Eretz Yisrael, what's the status of Eretz Yisrael? Oh boy, we never really talked about that. Aruch HaShulchan didn't imagine that there would be when the Aruch HaShulchan wrote this in the late 1800s, he never imagined that you'd have Rov Yoshveh Aleha, that we'd have the Zechus that we have now to have so many Jews living in Eretz Yisrael. What's the status of Eretz Yisrael? Do we depend, is it the majority? Are the majority of Israelis Ashkenazim or Edot Mizrach? Could we get a number on that? I think it's probably still Ashkenazi. I think the Edot Mizrach is still a minority in terms of the Iraqis, the whole Edot Mizrach, the Shah. So the ksuva at a Sephardi wedding in Eretz Yisrael, the ksuva said, I'm just saying this for the oral recording, the ksuva said not to take another wife for 10 years. I hear that. Okay. So you have this situation where the Sfardim in Eretz Yisrael, even if they don't adhere to Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom, there very times a ksuva can nevertheless say that they will not take another wife, and that commitment would presumably be binding. But I want to know, what about, let's say we assume that Eretz Yisrael, you're not allowed to take another wife. Well, certainly in Eretz Yisrael, you can't, because forgetting about what the minhagim of the Klal Yisrael there are laws in Eretz Yisrael against polygamy, I'm assuming. I'm assuming it's illegal in Eretz Yisrael. I'm quite confident it's illegal. And we saw last week that Ramah said, I mean, Ramah doesn't, the Sfarim might not care what Ramah says, but if there's a country, I think the Shulchan Aruch also said maybe, that in a country where the minhag is not to do it, so that not to have multiple wives, then you can't either, even according to halacha. Even if it's not a halachic, even if it's just that's the country's rule. So what about this guy who moved from Iraq to Eretz Yisrael with two wives? Look at what the Aruch HaShulchan says. V'haholich mimakam hamutar. L'makam ha'aser, and he plans on staying in Eretz Yisrael. Ain't died to lachzer. Mimel dinichnas bechlata kanas ha'makam, and he's not allowed to take another wife. If you have an Iraqi come to Israel, could he marry two wives in Israel? No, it's aser. However, look what I underlined. Amna misha balader im nashav. If he comes with his wives to a place where it's mutter, from a place where it was mutter in Iraq, l'makam ha'aser to Yerushalayim, where let's say it's aser right now. Even though he plans on staying there for the rest of his life, mikol makom ein tzarich legarish achas mehen. The bechahai gavne vade lo tikin Rabbeinu Gershom. It's definitely clear that Rabbeinu Gershom would not say, if you got married legally, and then in your middle of your marriage to two multiple wives, in the middle of your marriage, you moved, your family moved to a place where it's not okay halachically, Rabbeinu Gershom would never have said that you have to divorce your wife who you took with beheter, that you have to now divorce her. That's clear. According to the Aruch HaShulchan. Finally, one last halacha, and that is, if you remember, we started the day, I should have rearranged this, we started the day with a Ber Hetiv, who said that you're allowed to have, that the Isser of Rabbeinu Gershom, marrying multiple wives, is only on the man, not the woman. So you could have two Ashkenazi girls who are bound by but there is not a halach on the woman. Therefore, you could have two Ashkenazi girls. You could have, you know, Freidi and Sprinza marry Ibrahim, you know, the Iraqi. That would be permitted. That was what the Ber Hetiv says. However, the Aruch HaShulchan questions that. Here, Yesh Mishomer, that it's only on the men, not on the women. However, says the Aruch HaShulchan, relating to that very Ber Hetiv's Kula, I'm not really sure about this. Lonis bar esli davetzeh. Not really sure about this. Okay. So Adka, now we really finished. That was the end of the sugya of Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom. I want to just open up the antidote, if you would say, to Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom, which is the heter of Meir Rabbanim. And the first question that we have to see is, wait a second, if really, really the halachas of Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom don't apply anymore, because it's finished, let's say, 781 years ago, Mikra Hadin, and it didn't apply to the whole world. So if you have some crazy case that will come up now, let's say you have some situation where, again, a couple didn't have children for 10 years, or case where the woman is nishtates, she went crazy, so or whatever difficult situation that, you know, comes up, a woman goes off the derech and, you know, doesn't want to take a get. So, okay, so maybe Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom just says, in those very specific situations, you're allowed to take a second wife. Would you need, nowadays, to also get a heter Meir Rabbanim? So we have to try to uncover the roots of this heter Meir Rabbanim. What I really want to know is, when Rabbeinu Gershom said, you can't take a second, you can't divorce a wife without her will, her acceptance, and of course, the corollary to that, that puts the teeth, you know, that gives the teeth to that, is that, and you're not allowed to take a second wife. Did he say, but if you have a permission from 100 rabbis, then it's mutter? Or he didn't say that, but later generations said, we have to have some way to negotiate this limitation to, you know, when in extreme circumstances to circumnavigate Rabbeinu Gershom's cherem, So therefore, the later generations said, we have to have some way out. So they sort of engineered this heter. If you have Me'er Rabbonim, that's going to take care of, get rid of, or circumvent the Isser of Rabbeinu Gershom. That's what we have to figure out. So let's look at a Shas that chose Marami Rotenberg, who's the very early, or the early Rishonim. Not so long after Rabbeinu Gershom. Marami Rotenberg was the Rebbe of the Rush, right? Yes, he was the Rebbe of the Rush. And when he was imprisoned, that's when the Rush got scared, when the Marami Rotenberg was thrown into jail by the Emperor Rudolf, that's when the Rush, I'd say, freaked out and said, uh-oh, well, he took the Marami Rotenberg because he's the God of Hadar. Well, I'm second to him, I'm next. So that's when the Rush fled Germany area, wherever he lived in the Germany area, and he moved to the Sephardi world. That's when the Rush escaped. So that's the easy way to remember that the Marami Rotenberg was a Rebbe of the Rush. Okay, says the Marami Rotenberg, Chayrim takonas ha-kihilos, asher some Rabbeinu Gershom mar ha-gola, she'ein lisa shtei nashim, ein la-hatira. You can only, again, this is probably one of the first recordings of the concept of Me'er Rabbanim, but it's early. You could only permit this Chayrim Rabbeinu Gershom rak be'mea anashim. That's an interesting word. He doesn't say 100 rabbis, he says 100 people. But now let's be introduced to a whole new area of halacha, migimel aratzos. They have to be divided up from three different countries. You need 100 people, not just 100 people. 100 people from three different countries, migimel kehilas, from three different communities. What do those words mean? We'll have to analyze later. And not only that, but they actually have to have a reason. It's not just you want to get a heter, so get a heter, just have a lot of people sign a document on its mutter. V'gam osam, even those 100, lo yaskim lahatir, ach yiru tam evur lahatir. There has to be a very specific, clear reason to be matir, this iser of Rabbeinu Gershom. And it has to be from three different communities, three different lands. We'll see the parameter of what's a land. My Shaila really is going to be, is what about the 50 states? Are these 50 lands, or is it one big country of America? We'll have to discuss that later. Besides that, says Rabbeinu Gershom, if somebody ever does exercise his right, or this heter me rabbanim, and he gets the permission to marry a second wife without divorcing his first wife, he has to provide her, his first wife, who he's now taking a second wife with, he has to provide an escrow account for her ksuva to the first one who didn't ever take a get. Let's say she has a $50,000 ksuva. He has to put $50,000 in escrow so that when she will be ready to take her get, it's sitting and waiting there. Fascinating. Okay, so that's a very early, that's the Marami Rotenberg. That's a very, and he already, the Marami Rotenberg, introduces the concept of Me'a Anasha. But I still don't know if it was part of Rabbeinu Gershom's original takana, that the original takana had a safety valve that in Sha'as HaTchak you could rely on Me'er Rabbanim, or it was introduced later. Fine. So you're saying maybe the leniency of the Marami Rotenberg is only because he lived after, in the 6th millennium already, so since it's more lenient anyway, so then he gave us the Heter Me'er Rabbanim. Right. But the thing is, it doesn't sound from the Lashon of the Marami Rotenberg that he's making up a kula. He's referring very directly to the Chayim Rabbeinu Gershom, which he's specifying, and he says it's only mutter if you have 100 rabbis. So I don't even know if he holds that it expired at the year. The Shulchan Aruch passed that it did expire. But I'm not sure. Not everyone held that way. Not everyone held that it expired at the year, at the end of the 5th millennium. The Shulchan Aruch did say that, but not everybody held that. Fine. Says the Bach, Ra'isi mirabosir shekiblu gam hemi gdoli olam, sheyatzil ha'ini lefnei ha'gedolim sheba'osu hador. If somebody, again, for whatever unusual circumstance finds himself in, they should present this situation, all the reasons, to the gedolim of that dor, v'yaskim, who have to agree. And on the bottom, v'yechtumu mea rabbanim. Ah, there have to be 100 rabbis. So here we have the Bach introduces the word rabbis, which the Maharam Rotenberg did not specify. This then comes the Darkei Moshe, and really throws in a little bit of a loop, because the Darkei Moshe, of course, is the Ramah. He's going to say some things in Darkei Moshe, which is commentary on the tour, that he doesn't actually say in the Ramah on the Shulchan Aruch. We saw the Ramah say on the Shulchan Aruch. We actually, if you noticed or didn't notice, when we learned the Shulchan Aruch just a few minutes ago, the words Heter Meir Rabbanim did not appear anywhere. It just talked about, does the Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom apply or does it not apply? It didn't mention anything about, oh, but make sure you pick up a Heter Meir Rabbanim on your way out. It didn't mention that. Maybe this is the reason. Says Rama, Mikom Kom Nira, the Bizman Hazeh, says Rama, Ein Onutzrichim Meir Anashim Lahatir. You don't need a Heter Meir Rabbanim, Bizman Hazeh. Why? Because the Gzeira finished 781 years ago. Because Bizman Hazeh, that's what Vein Sarach Heter Klal. He's not saying that you're allowed to just take as many wives as you want, but he's saying the Cherem, in its strength and force of Cherem Rabbeinu Gershom, is no longer binding in that original form, and therefore you don't have to have a Hetem Rabbanim. And okay, so that we are no heg, we have the minhag lachin afal pi shadayin no heg no again b'gzeiras hagan. Even though we're no heg, we practice the same isra polygamy, but the gzeira with all of its strength is kvar batla, and therefore it's only a minhag. And for a minhag, you don't need 100 rabbis to be matir minhag. That's so. According to the Rab, if we would stop here, and maybe we will, maybe we'll do one more point. If we would stop here, we would say, If whatever circumstance allows you to take a second wife, you don't really need to get yourself a Heter Meir Rabbanim. That's the Rama's opinion. That is the Rama's opinion. Comes the Meshuv Davar and says, you should just know this Rama is not really accepted. For example, we're going to see the Chasam Sofer later. The Chasam Sofer is very clear that you definitely need 100 Meir Rabbanim. The question will be, what is the binding effect of this minhag that we have nowadays? If we say there's no real Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom anymore, it's not really a Chaim Rabbeinu Gershom anymore, it's only a fill in the blank. What is it nowadays? A minhag? What binds me to listen to that minhag? I want to take a second wife because my first wife, something happened. I don't know, a terrible situation. She doesn't want to take it, a really tough situation, $250,000 of lawyer fees already, and she's still refusing to take it. So I want to just get married already. Okay, so you tell me there's a minhag not to. So what happens if I don't listen to a minhag? What's binding me to not be able to go forward? So the Chasam Sofer said, well, if you violate that, that would be a violation of lo yachel dvaro. It's like breaking a neder. It's a communal minhag. It has a halacha of a neder. And if you break a neder, that's lo yachel dvaro. It's like an issa daraisa of breaking a neder. Says the Meshuv Davar, no, that's wrong. The Chasam Sofer is totally off base with that. What if I make a neder and I break my neder, that's a violation of a neder. But if you make a neder for me, or if the rabbi Gershom, Rabbeinu Gershom made a neder or made some kind of cherem 1,000 years ago, that doesn't mean if I break it that I am breaking a neder. It's not a violation of lo yachel dvaro. It's just I'm not following the minhag. What's the issur of not following the minhag? So you're saying something else. You're trying to resuscitate the Chasam Sofer. You're saying that since the whole Klal Yisrael accepted it, then it did become like a neder. And there, if I would violate, that would be like breaking a neder. I hear that. You're also being mechadish that even if not all of Klal Yisrael accepted, even this portion, my segment of Klal Yisrael, where I come from, Ashkenaz, I accepted it. If I would break it, that would be a violation of a neder. Okay. So that's what the Chasam Sofer says. And the Meshuv Davar takes issue and says, no, it's just violating a minhag. Who says you have to listen to minhagim? The Pasuk says, Divrei Kabbalah, Al Titosh Torah Simecha. Okay. Nevertheless, we, even though the Ramah told us that you don't need a Heter Meir Rabbanim, we have not really accepted that Ramah. we, Bizman Hazeh, in a specific circumstances where it is permitted to allow a second wife and to not listen to Rabbeinu Gershom, Bizman Hazeh, we will always require a heter Mei Rabban. That is the conclusion of our Rabbeinu Goni Basa, the later poskim from the Bach and on, says that our minhag is that we do have this requirement of heter Mei Rabbanim, and Be'ezus Hashem next week, we will get into the parameters of what is the heter Mei Rabbanim, how will it apply, what does it mean, three countries, and you will see that this map, as Hashem next week, will be absolutely significant in defining what the three countries are. Do they have to be three countries, meaning three different governments? What if it's one gigantic empire? Does it have to be three different languages? We're going to see all those things as far as how do you put together the practical. Next week will be a how-to guide. How to put together a Heter Mei Rabbanim. So if anybody wants to, save their good friend who's having a problem with his wife and wants to figure out a Heter Mei Rabbanim for him, so next week will be the practical guide. Heter Mei Rabbanim Kehilchasa. That will be Be'ez Hashem next week's year. Okay, so I'm just going to turn off the recording.